listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
The pile-driving force of Zlatan Ibrahimovic's strike last night, his hat-trick goal, 4 on the night for PSG as they pick up a 5-0 win in Champions League football. Number 3 on the list, that's where Cristiano Ronaldo goes, 3rd on the all-time Champions League scorers list with his 2 goals last night as Los Blancos swept past a pretty shoddy Juventus side. And no goals from a United player, but an own goal gives the Red Devils a win against Real Sociedad. Relief for David Moyes as Rooney is questioned after the game about Sir Alex Ferguson's new novel. Welcome, novel? Autobiography. Makes him sound like he's written a storybook, that. Welcome to Thursday's edition of World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and, of course, the views from around the world of football. You can share your news and views with us at show@worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is, of course, our rant line, and there's the Facebook page as well. But today, of course, we're going to be getting into the fallout from last night's Champions League football. Some crazy scores. CSKA Moscow losing to Manchester City in the early game. Munich winning 5-0 against Pilsen. Galatasaray. Mancini is getting Gala playing some very, very good football indeed. Felipe Melo, absolute bullet of a header against FC Copenhagen. The man who was once voted for the worst player of the season at Juventus a few years back, putting on some decent shifts for Galatasaray. I'm sure Mancini's probably helping him along with that as well. Drogba and Wesley Schneider helping out in that win too. Real Madrid got their win against Juventus. Gareth Bale off the bench once again, an £86 million substitute. Fantastic stuff as Angel Di Maria continues his great performances. Cristiano Ronaldo with the 2 goals there. Manchester United relied on an own goal to beat Sociedad. Leverkusen with a 4-0 win. Stefan Kiebling with 2 strikes against Shakhtar. A very shoddy Shakhtar side indeed. Didn't perform last night. Just see what Fernandinho and Willian were to them. The real threat of Shakhtar has been lost at the moment. But fair play to Bayer Leverkusen, who put in a very good outing indeed. Benfica and Olympiacos played in a swamp in the Estadio de Lutz. Actually, that was where Andy Brassel was last night in Lisbon. An absolutely ridiculous game. UEFA should have at least postponed it, delayed it midway through, but instead decided to continue on through the wet and rain. We'll talk about that later on. And of course, we'll be talking about big, bad Zlatan. Cavani gets 1, Ibrahimovic gets 4. On the night against Anderlecht as PSG romp past the Belgian champions with a 5-0 win. We're going to be talking to Will Tidy a little later on about the English clubs, about Manchester United specifically. He's a big, big knowledgeable guy on Manchester United. And of course about Sir Alex Ferguson's new book as well. We'll be getting into that. There's plenty of stories that have come out, as I say, from his book and from last night's games. But one of the ones that I'm actually looking at today is something that involves one of the teams who is in action tonight in the Europa League, Tottenham Hotspur, who play this evening in the sister tournament of Europe, if you will. They have what should be a difficult trip, but not too difficult, against Sheriff from Macedonia, I believe. Moldova, I do apologise, from Moldova. They play tonight, but they're looking to bolster their forward line. Now, we've seen they've got Soldado, great player, scored on the weekend. Lovely finish. I'm very pleased that they could bring him in because I think we here on World Football Daily thought Soldado deserved to be at a better side than Valencia. Whether Tottenham are that or not remains to be seen. If they can make the Champions League, you could very well say that they are. But apparently Daniel Levy is looking at splashing even more cash, about 86 million, burning a hole in his pocket. Already spent about 90 odd though this summer. He's looking at bringing in Christian Benteke from Aston Villa. Now, we've discussed this on the show a number of times about bringing Benteke in, about Benteke leaving, about why he stayed as well with Aston Villa. Because I said that Benteke would be an ideal person to bring into Tottenham Hotspur, no doubt about that. That he'd fit in very well with Spurs, having players who can play around him, not having to do the whole ball on his own type thing, but also still relishing some direct football as well that Vertonghen can provide with those sweeping balls from the back four. Also, you have the fact that Christian Benteke's got a World Cup coming up. He and Lukaku will be vying for that solo spot in the front line of Belgium's attack. And at the moment, it's a very close call between the two. Lukaku's looking great at Everton and getting game time once again after his miserable start to the season with Chelsea, not getting played really at all. Benteke, on the other hand, will want to continue playing, so he attracts managers' attention in the international his international side's attention, and people recognise that he's the top dog ahead of Lukaku for that spot in the national team. If Benteke were to go, would they play Soldado and Benteke up front together? Are Villa likely to let him go as well? He's so integral to them at the moment. Libor Kossak didn't come in and do the business as I'm sure Paul Lambert would have hoped for, although they did do reasonably well without Benteke. It wasn't the same a Villa side, and you saw that against Tottenham on the weekend. So Tottenham are looking at Benteke, apparently. It'd be interesting to see how this one goes down. I don't think Villa can afford to let him go just yet. And I don't think Benteke can afford to leave Villa and possibly be sat on the bench at all, especially when Lukaku is going to be getting regular first-team football at Everton. Just a little side thought on some possible transfer news coming up in January. Still a few months away before the January transfer window opens, of course. And that's why we should stick to ongoings on the pitch. And I'm delighted to say that the man joining me today to talk about all things on the pitch in terms of Manchester United and off the pitch in terms of Manchester United as well is a man who knows a lot about the Red Devils. They've been making waves in the press. He makes waves in the papers as well. And, of course, on the pages of Bleacher Report 2. I'm delighted to say that joining me here on World Football Daily, back on the airwaves, is, of course, Mr. Will Tidy, to tidy up all of these stories coming out from Old Trafford and from Manchester's football scene in general. Will, how are you, mate? It's a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Very good, thanks, Oliver. Always a pleasure to be on, mate. Hope you're well.
I'm very well indeed, as I'm sure the listeners are aware. I've got my voice back, so you're very lucky that you're able to hear me today, which is a good thing. And we're hearing a lot coming out of Manchester United as well, thanks to, of course, the release of Sir Alex Ferguson's new book. We all expected him to be dishing the dirt and, you know, really exposing everything that went on behind the scenes that we all missed since the release of his last book in 1999. It's not quite been what we expected, has it, Will?
Yeah, I mean, I think he has spoken quite harshly in the book about a few characters. I'm honestly not surprised by anything in the book, to be honest. I think a lot of these opinions we knew he had already. He's maybe said them in a little stronger terms than we've heard before. But this is a manager who never really cared about being liked by his players or other players. He cared about winning trophies and winning respect. And I think whatever he says in the book, he's still got the respect of everybody. And obviously no one can take the trophies away.
Are you surprised about what he hasn't said, though? Because there's been very much, obviously still a very prominent member at Manchester United, but there's not been much of what we were hoping would be dishing the dirt on the club. It's all been about people that aren't really associated with Manchester United anymore.
Yeah, you've got to be careful with that. I mean, Ferguson is as big as he could be. He has a stand named in his honour. There's a statue outside of Old Trafford made of bronze. He is a living United legend, but you can still harm a club even from that position if you say certain things. He knows that continued United success is in his interest. The interest of his legacy is in the interests of he fell in love with Manchester United and the romantic history that was attached to it, and that brought him to the club. And I don't think he's in the business now, especially in the employment as he is of the Glazers, effectively still taking healthy money from them as a director at United. And also that would undermine David Moyes further. I think it's a shame the book came out when it did, actually. That's my one criticism. I think the timing is poor. I think it's undermined David Moyes at an early stage in what was always going to be a difficult succession. So I think he was wary enough to say, I'm not going to go against the club. And I'm sure it's a back and forth. Paul Hayward, who wrote the book with him, was probably pushing him as hard as he could to go at the Glazers, to go at other figures. And they just probably came to a middle ground where they agreed they'd go at certain things and not at others. And United was off bounds, I would think.
And extremely off bounds as well. The misunderstanding between Ferguson and John Magnier, I think a lot of people were expecting that, and what happened with, of course, the horse, the Rock of Gibraltar. Expecting more from that, it was only dedicated a couple of paragraphs. Do you think we're likely to ever know what went on between these two in this misunderstanding?
No, I don't, because I think John Magnier is an incredibly wealthy and influential and powerful man who really had the upper hand in that situation, I think, and really had almost Ferguson's career in his hands at one point there with the United board and what was going on. And I just think once you come to a settlement legally like that, the way that things are discussed, and you see this in other spheres of life as well, there's a line written under it. And what's said is, you know, this just isn't talked about anymore. And whatever your grievances were before Ferguson, the money's been paid to Ferguson now, and that money is basically hush money, that he's not going to talk about it again. He won't talk about that again. He's a stubborn man. And he knows legally he's not supposed to, and Magna the same situation. So I don't expect to hear any more about that.
Before we get into last night's game, United game, of course, the win against Sociedad, there was a response after the game. We obviously heard Roy Keane on Tuesday night talking on English television about Sir Alex Ferguson, and Wayne Rooney had his piece as well yesterday after the game. Very much made it sound like that Ferguson had kind of put his twist on the Rooney departure story, and now it was all clear that Rooney never officially handed in this written transfer request. And not only that, but Rooney saying that now Moyes was at the club, it seemed very much more, he seemed more settled. Do you think Rooney is actually enjoying playing under Moyes more than he did Ferguson over the last couple of years?
Well, I think there's a couple of factors at play here. Firstly, Robin van Persie was remarkable last season in his first season with United. And I do think what happened is Wayne Rooney was pushed a little bit to the side in terms of his status at the club. I don't think he was the top dog. Robin van Persie was very much the focal point. He was the natural choice to lead the line if United were playing with one striker. And that then opened up a selection dilemma for Ferguson. You can't drop Van Persie. Your option is to play Rooney deeper. He needed an extra midfielder. And I think what Rooney was saying was, hang on a second, you know, if there's one spot here, why don't I take it? You know, I should be the number one player here. And I think that's where the clash comes of egos and of importance. And Ferguson's stubbornness and being able to say to any player, no matter whatever their stature, no, you know, you're not fit enough when you come back at the start of the season. You don't play. You're on the bench. You know, you're not my best option to lead the line. You don't play leading the line. And I think that's just a clash that hasn't happened under David Moyes, because Robin van Persie has a few issues with injuries. I think Rooney has been a much, much sharper player than he was at the start of last season. So I don't think Moyes has to deal with that issue yet. I think what would be interesting is if he brought in another striker, or if one of his other strikers started to really prolifically score goals. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but then we might see this issue come up again.
We do, obviously, as well. You mentioned that it kind of undermined David Moyes, the launch of this book. And Moyes has been very kind of diplomatic about the whole thing. Do you get the sense that Moyes is trying to be that same managerial style like Sir Alex Ferguson, not caring what other people say? Do you think he has that hard kind of skin to be able to play that managerial role? And do you think if he does, that was why Ferguson recommended that Moyes comes in? Because he's made it very clear that it's about the club, not about the players in his new book, Fergie.
Yeah, I think what happens there is Ferguson's identified the character that he wants to take over from United, because it's one that he sees elements of his own personality in, and he wants that culture to continue. And I think the message to David Moyes from the start would have been, this is your bubble that you work in. This is Manchester United. Everything that comes from the media in the first few months of your job, you've just got to shut it out. It's not relevant to your long-term task at United. You can look back at Ferguson's career and know that he had to do the same thing. That Moyes will feel like he's doing work behind the scenes that's going to eventually get him to where he gets to. And I wonder if there's almost a conceited thought process behind the scenes at United that, okay, top four finish, we don't win anything else, but, you know, that's part of the regrouping process. And we just get behind David Moyes. And for Moyes, it's very important that he projects himself as someone who's constantly in control, who's not being overly wound up by anything that's going on in the media. That's important because I think frustration can come in pretty quickly there. But it's about showing a calm front and just showing that he's got things under control, because otherwise the players start to pick up on that, I think.
I'm sure David Moyes wouldn't have liked the fact that the book and all this publicity has come a day before a big clash against Real Sociedad. They were able to get 3 points last night at Old Trafford. But, Will, did you think it was as smooth sailing as some people thought? I've spoken to people that said they were very much on edge last night during the United game. Others have said that they felt United put in a good performance and never really looked too much in doubt for that. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, it reminded me of actually a lot of the Champions League group games they've had over the last two or three seasons, I think. They, at Old Trafford in particular, they haven't really put teams away in the manner that we used to see them do so. And some of that's a confidence thing. Some of that maybe is a luck thing. I mean, they had some close calls last night. They could have won the game 3 or 4-0. Sociedad had a couple of chances. I do think you feel a bit nervous with United right now, because you get a sense they're not sure of themselves, and that every game is you know, them always sort of desperately just trying to right the ship a little bit and to get it moving in the right direction. So I think the victory was all important. I still don't think we're seeing United playing very well, although Wayne Rooney is in brilliant form right now and was very impressive last night. And finally, we saw Shinji Kagawa play in the number 10 role, which is, you know, hopefully where he will play moving forward.
What have you made of Kagawa this season? I did want to ask you about getting another start finally. His appearances have been pretty sporadic this season. Do you think Kagawa is good enough to be demanding a place in that side on a regular basis?
He's one of those players that falls into a difficult area for a manager in transition, because he is a player who needs continuity. And I think we see it with these types of players who play in behind a striker. I think Juan Mata is a classic example. David Silva is another one. These are players who really, it's about playing games, really. And I know it's an old cliche, but it's about getting into the rhythm of playing and getting that touch back and that feel for the game. And we started to see it towards the end of the game from Kagawa last night when he moved into number 10. He started to pick up the ball, just as we used to see him play for Dortmund. And he'd pick up the ball and instinctively find a pass, find an angle that other players don't find. I would be tempted. I know there's a lot of talk about Januzaj, as a youngster that's come through. My preference right now would be to see him just say, okay, Kagawa plays number 10 and he starts the next 3-4 games and plays them out. And let's just see if we can get him into some form, and let's just see if he's the player that we thought he was.
Would that be then you saying put Rooney up front on his own and then you find somebody else to play on that left flank role? Because last night, in at least the formation lineup, Kagawa was playing slightly wider and obviously creeping inside and coming inside to take in that almost that number 10 role last night. Well, I mean, there is, especially once Van Persie gets fit, you've got Hernandez in there who wants game time, you've got Danny Welbeck, Rooney, Kagawa all want to play down the centre of the pitch. It's difficult to find options, and then the left and right flanks are where United are struggling this year at the moment.
Yeah, I think right now if Van Persie's not fit for the next game, The attacking option that I would pick is I would play Rooney as the striker. I would play Kagawa in behind Rooney. I would probably play Valencia on the right-hand side, because I do feel there's some signs from him that we're seeing that athleticism back. I think still some of his decision-making was a little off last night, not as considered as you'd want. And then I would probably, you know, again, on a fitness issue, my option would probably be Danny Welbeck to play that left-sided role. And I think that gives you a strong four. And then obviously you've got problems when Van Persie comes back selection-wise, but you've got a good problem. And you have to make a decision with Kagawa. You say, what is he? Is he the number 10? Then if the number 10 spot's taken by Rooney, then he sits on the bench. You know, you don't necessarily have to say, well, let's play him as the left-sided player just because we want to put him in the team.
Well, let's hope that that doesn't discourage Kagawa from maybe looking elsewhere, and that he stays at Manchester United and at the Premier League, at least for us fans of English football, because he's a wonderful player to watch. Just finally, Will, the back two, the centre-back pairing of Evans and Jones. Now, this is a centre-back pairing that for the last 2 years we've been hearing is the pairing that will take over from Vidic and Ferdinand. Ferdinand has started to trail off quite impressively this season. We've really seen his form and his fitness kind of dying out slightly. Do you think it's time for Moyes to just make a bold leap and keep Evans and Jones in as this back two for a period of time to get them understanding and working together?
Oh, it's such a difficult one. I think you really have to be on the training ground, I think, to see what you're getting from Nemanja Vidic and from Rio Ferdinand. And I don't know. I still feel like if United were in a big European knockout tie, I'm gonna go to those trusted two right now. I just feel like maybe one more season. I know what we're saying about the succession. I don't know if I've seen enough. I think we've had some really good games from Johnny Evans. I think Phil Jones maybe is making some quiet progress. He's still not the next Brian Robson as we would build he would be. And that's going to take time. I think there's still another season in Ferdinand. I think people are very quick to criticise him. But as Jose Mourinho has said recently, centre-backs in the modern game, you don't need that much pace if you can still judge the game and you know where to be. I think Ferdinand, for all the criticism he takes, he's still a quality central defender. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He's got a lot of experience. I'm still going to Ferdinand and Vidic, I think, but they need to improve and they need to get some consistency going.
Sticking by the elder statesman, Will. It's not progress, I'm not saying that. Just quickly, actually, before we move to City, very briefly as well. Phil Jones, where do you prefer him then? As that holding midfielder or as the centre-back? Ferguson said he was going to be one of the best players of all time at Manchester United, but we've not seen him hold down a position at either place yet.
Yeah, I never saw that. I'm not sure where Ferguson was looking there. I think Jones has got great athleticism. He's good defensively. He's very strong, but technically, I don't see him being in that caliber. People talked about Duncan Edwards and Brian Robson. These were players who were technically extremely strong. I mean, the first touch, the ability to go past the player, the ability to finish with both feet and to head home. I don't see that in Jones. I don't know whether it's going to come over time. What I see is someone who can be a very good defensive player for United. I'm not sure he's good enough on the deck to be a defensive midfielder in the modern game, because I think you need passing range that I'm not sure he has. I might be proved wrong. I would think right now he's probably a centre-back or a makeshift right-back.
It'd be very interesting. I don't think we've seen Phil Jones too often at right back, but another place that he can play. Let's move to the noisy neighbours, if you will, of Manchester United. Manchester City in the early game yesterday in Moscow, getting a 2-1 win, coming up back from behind, would have been a fairy tale story for Manchester United if Zoran Tosic's goal had been the only goal of the game. But Sergio Aguero pulling City out of a slight bubble. Even before the game, what did you make of the fact that they were spray painting the pitch green? I mean, a disaster for UEFA all round this game, before and after as well, wasn't it, Will?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in a way, yes. But I mean, don't we like, in a sense, this sort of the texture of European football? I mean, I think we come to a point now where almost every pitch is some immaculate carpet, every stadium is some immaculate shining dome. And I think it's nice for in a Champions League to have the occasional mix where we go play on an old park pitch, I don't see a problem with that. City didn't seem to have that much trouble playing on it last night. So I think move on, players are too spoiled for pitches these days. I like to see these old style pitches occasionally.
It was definitely a lot more difficult for Manchester City last night. A person that didn't seem to have too many problems with it was David Silva, who it's not the same rip-roaring start that we saw in their title-winning season, but we are seeing, after a sloppy year, Will, a much more improved and confident David Silva so far this season.
Yeah, I love David Silva. I think he's just a lovely player to watch. And almost... so similar to Juan Mata, obviously, with the left-footed tendency and the stature, but he's more graceful than Mata for me sometimes, the way he glides around the pitch. Mm. I think the player who's really impressed me for City this season is Negredo, because I know Aguero's scoring goals and he looks as sharp as anything, but Negredo is such an intelligent player. I mean, his work off the ball and the way he attracts players to him. He's so good in the air and he's such a foil for Aguero. That is the pairing to me in the Premier League. I mean, Aguero and Negredo, I mean, is there a better strike pair in Europe right now on their day? I'm not sure there is.
They are banging in the goals at the moment. Are you surprised how quickly Negredo's taken to Premier League football and Manchester City in general? Or did he always have this in his locker, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it seems to me like the transition from Spanish players coming into the Premier League is generally fairly smooth based on, you know, strikers. You've seen Torres, obviously, and Michu with Swansea, and then we have Mata. And I mean, the list goes on. Obviously, Silva was one you mentioned there of Spanish players coming in an attacking sense. I think what happens is, you know, Michu has talked about this before, you actually find you've got more space in the final third than you do in the Spanish game. And it allows you to thrive a bit. Negredo is a beast of an athlete. I mean, he's a big guy. He's very strong. And I think you know, one of the signings really of the summer, based on what I've seen so far.
And just finally, City seem to have cracked the European case as well. Aside from that Munich game, this is a City side now that we're not seeing stumbling through Europe. Is that down to Pellegrini or is that down to City's experience?
Oh, well, you know, I think hold back just a second here, because I still felt defensively all over the shop yesterday, and they were lucky they didn't concede more goals. So I do think there's more work to do. And I think if they'd have been away, I mean, they got absolutely roasted by Bayern Munich. Let's not forget that. So there's still some naivety in defence. And, you know, with some of the younger defenders that are in there, great potential. Obviously, Nastasic is a player who's going to be a really, really great player. So I still worry about them defensively. And you know, let's see what happens when they go to Bayern.
It will be a very tough test indeed. And there's no stopping Bayern Munich at the moment. There's no stopping World Football Daily. But Will, we will have to let you go today. Thank you so much for taking up plenty of your time, mate. We always enjoy having a good long chat with you about all things English football, mate.
Thanks, Ollie. Always a pleasure, mate. Good luck to the show.
Cheers, mate. Will Tidy there joining us here from Bleacher Report to talk all things Champions League football from last night. Manchester City and Manchester United in action. Will saying that he felt Nastasic is going to become a great, great player. Does look like he could become a great, great player. Not showing it right now. City, though, at least coming back from behind to win 2-1. They were a little unlucky, as I believe Dumbia scored a cracking goal for CSKA Moscow that was ruled out after a high foot near the face of Yaya Toure. Negredo having a goal ruled out for handball after the keeper palmed it from point blank range straight at the Spanish striker. But Negredo and Aguero both playing well, as did David Silva and Yaya Toure in a fantastic win for City. We're going to talk about what happened afterwards after the game and what happened during the game with the fans in the stands. Disgusting from the CSKA Moscow fans, but we'll talk about that a little later on when Rafa joins me here on World Football Daily. Manchester United, how convincing did you think it was from United? Rooney obviously playing fantastically well again. Great to see Kagawa. Great to see him again. It's like we keep not forgetting about him because everybody's saying play him. But it's like United keep forgetting about him. And when he does play, he's looking very good indeed. I love seeing Kagawa back on the pitch for United. But a big thanks there to Will Tidy for joining us here on World Football Daily, talking about Sir Alex Ferguson's book and Manchester United as well. Joining me here on WFD now is, of course, from Will Tidy, the expert giving us all his views on English football, is, of course, a man who's going to join me to wrap up the Champions League action from last night. That's Rafa G. Rafman, how are you today, mate? A little hungover after celebrating the birthday, I think?
No, man. It kind of came and went. You know, I wanted to make sure nothing too crazy happened. My wife got me a very thoughtful gift.
Thoughtful, as in didn't cost much, but is really important.
Not too crazy. Pretty expensive considering what it was. No, she got me a big kind of bucket of pumpkin ice cream from 31 Flavors. Now you might be thinking, oh, that's such a lame gift. But you don't understand how much I personally look forward to 31 Flavors pumpkin ice cream every October when it comes out. It's literally it's one of the highlights of my year, okay? Seriously. So that was very thoughtful of her. And the other thing is that she doesn't like it, so she knows that by buying it, she's, you know, basically letting me eat a whole tub of ice cream by myself, which is fine. You know, I dig that. That's very nice. That's very selfless. And I appreciate that, wifey, just in case you ever listen to this podcast. But real quick, before we get too carried away, I'm surprised that you said that, that what you said in the little intro of me was to Manchester United and some of their fans being kind of critical and a little bit worried because, I mean, maybe it was just yesterday in the initial reaction, but some of the articles I was reading, some of the social media I was following, was generally positive response. A lot of, oh, Giggsy had a wonderful game. You know, Rooney came in and he really took on that mantle up top and put in a good shift and this, that, and the other. When all I could think about was, guys, you didn't even score. You know what I mean?
And it wasn't like the own goal was even. It wasn't like United forced that own goal. That ball, when it comes back, should have been absolutely hoofed away by Inigo Martinez. That should never have got anywhere near the Sociedad goal again after it bounced back off the post. I have no idea what he was thinking. Some people were saying that he was distracted by Chicharito, who obviously came across and maybe slightly interfered with play. He was offside, and so you've got the question of, you know, should it have even stood because the attacker influenced the defender's play and therefore led to the own goal after Hernandez was offside. Graham Souness last night on the kind of breakdown analysis was saying that, or it might have been Peter Schmeichel, actually, one of the two, was saying that the way that Martinez approached that ball, he was always trying to hit it with his right foot. He was running directly at it as it came straight back off him off the post. And he was always leaning towards trying to use his right foot to clear it away. And he's just completely got it all wrong. That would have happened whether Hernandez was there or not. The fact of the matter is that whether Martinez has messed up or whether Hernandez has influenced him messing up, either way, any defender in their right mind would have had that ball through their foot, first and foremost, not their knee, and either smashed over the top of that crossbar or hooked away with their left boot. There should be no way that Martinez should have been steering that into his own net. United, you know, it's a Sociedad side that have played well. You know, you can't deny they haven't played well against Leverkusen and Shakhtar, to be honest. And they're unlucky to be without a point after the first three games and looking like they are set to be knocked out of the Champions League at the group stage. But Sociedad still have played well and did have spurts against United last night. You know, a couple of efforts that rattled the De Gea's crossbar, that free kick, magnificent free kick that shook the bar around De Gea. And De Gea was getting nowhere near that if that's, you know, a couple of inches further inside the post and going in the back of the net. So Sociedad had their chances. United weren't on like easy street. They didn't cruise to that victory. They should have wrapped things up. Valencia struck the post. Rooney had a couple of efforts that he should have put in. I will say that Rooney played well. You know, I mean, he's been on a charge this season. Absolute charge this season. And great to see him doing that. But at the same time, you do think that the United fans that were getting all kind of high and mighty about a 1-0 win against Sociedad at home at Old Trafford, yes, it was an okay, it was a good performance. I wouldn't say they excelled in any way, shape or form. And I also wouldn't say that they ever looked 100% comfortable, especially with the slender 1-0 lead from the own goal. I mean, that's just the way I see and the way I'd see football in general. I mean, you can have a 1-0 win where you tear somebody apart and they don't get close to you. But that wasn't the case last night. United could have easily come away with just 1 point from that tie against Sociedad at home.
No, I completely agree with you. And I read a lot of stuff about, you know, Giggsy showed a masterclass performance yesterday. And it's like, I just can't can't see those superlatives thrown around in a game where you didn't score. The only reason why you won was because, you know, a defender just completely stepped over his own 2 feet, had 2 left feet. I don't know. I was just kind of very shocked at some of the reactions to that game. I'm glad that maybe, you know, I guess today more people are kind of taking that realistic, you know, response to it, and I think that Manchester United should be worried. That's not a result that you see Sir Alex Ferguson's United of last year getting at home against Real Sociedad. And you know, I'm with you. I think Sociedad are a good team. They're representing fairly well. I was a little disappointed in the Shakhtar performance personally, but, you know, and I'm expecting a little bit more of them. I hope that they do get some points and you know, the table reflects a little bit more kindly to them. I was very shocked by the Manchester United performance. I was also very interested. I'm not sure if you've touched on this yet, but the whole Robben not taking a penalty, little petulant Robben coming back out and trying to prove a point, trying to be all big Billy Big Boots to Pep, man. Did you see that in the Bayern game or no?
Yeah. I saw the highlights of the Bayern game. To be honest, I had a very strong feeling what way that result was going to go. So, I mean, Bayern did play them off the park. They're just phenomenal, aren't they? You can't measure how good this Bayern side play at points.
Cool, about getting 5 goals past them too.
Because they're off the chart. There is nobody. I mean, there is nobody that I've seen in this Champions League so far that has come anywhere near to the quality of football that Bayern have played.
In my notes yesterday, Juice, I kind of brought up. I was like, well, it's looking like a Real Madrid, you know, Bayern Munich final at this point. To me at least. But I mean, I can't see Real Madrid really being too much of a speed bump to these guys.
Not right now. Not at all right now. I mean, it's going to be like last year. Yeah, we got to the knockout stages and we were kind of saying, oh, Bayern are playing really well, but, you know, they have a habit of slipping up, you know. It's quite often themselves that beat themselves. They've got over that. Last year showed they've got over that. And this season, it's just continuing in the Champions League. There's no talk at the moment. I mean, beginning of the season, we were kind of saying, oh, look, there's people coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, Pep's got it all wrong, blah, blah, blah. There's none of that at this moment right now. Bayern look in superb form. I mean, it could have been more than 5 last night for Bayern against Pilsen. Really could have. I'm immensely surprised that it wasn't to an extent. But I also think that it was like, okay, we've got 5. Like, don't worry about it. You know, oh, okay. Yeah. We're cruising. Hey, don't worry. More chances will come, guys. You know, don't worry about it. It's so relaxed and casual from them. Really is. Nice to see Götze getting on the score sheet as well, because, to be honest, you know, considering how hyped up his move was before the Champions League final, not seen much of Mario Götze. I don't think he'd ever wish that he was still at Dortmund, considering the way this Bayern team are playing, but I'm pretty sure he'd have liked to have been a bigger part of this Bayern side at the moment.
Look, can I just kind of cut in here, and maybe that this is something that I'm just being way too over analytical about, Jews, but could you maybe see, and I'm thinking about, you know, specifically this little Robben kind of statement that he wanted to make and not taking the penalty, even though Pep wanted him to take a penalty, and this is a whole response to him not being able to take a free kick in the game at the weekend against Mainz, or whenever they played Mainz. As well as the whole fact that maybe Mario Götze hasn't scored yet. Because, I think he has been playing pretty well. I haven't watched too many Bayern Munich games this season. But I have caught, like, enough, actually. And I'm actually personally surprised with how much Bundesliga I've been watching this season as well. But the point being is that maybe, and this is because they are that good, there's these little kind of hierarchical cliques that are going on and little kind of class strats buildmen going on within the dressing room, to where people, you know, these guys are like, hey, I deserve to be the one scoring the goals. It'll be, you know, Robin and Ribery scoring the goals, and generally when I want to take the free kicks, I've been here longer, a Frank, or, you know, whatever it is. I seriously think that there's going to be some kind of inner turmoil eventually. There's got to be.
Like Madrid style kind of thing. All these little cliques are starting to.
Exactly, and ultimately, what happens is when you're so good that all you're doing is winning. I mean, you know, you almost get bored of winning, and you need a new challenge. So, I think that's kind of the only thing that I'm really hoping for. And again, like you said, we're looking at the group stages much like we did last year, where it seemed like the second coming of the greatest ever, basically. And I'm hoping that come the knockout stages, we're relieved a little bit by maybe some tension within the dressing room, some tension between egos.
Actually a side stepping up their game, getting themselves sorted in the dressing room and on the football pitch, and actually showing that other sides can play against this Bayern Munich side. That, I mean, sure, obviously we see we kind of enjoy looking at the disruption that surrounds Bayern from people off the pitch as much as it does on the pitch. And yeah, you know, a bit of tension in that dressing room might help to kind of unravel things a bit at Munich and make it a 2-3 horse race for the Champions League at the moment. But it would also be nice to see a side kind of just stepping up their game and saying, hey, oh, what? Everybody's saying Bayern are the best? We lost Blancos, you know? We lost Blancos, man. We splashed £86 million on substitutes. That's what we do. and maybe Madrid step up their game.
I was thinking the same thing, though, when Bale was kind of getting out of his little tracksuit and stuff. I was like, oh, god damn, that's so much money coming off the bench.
Damn, that's the most expensive guy running around in a bib that I've ever seen, man. That's unbelievable.
Seriously.
You know what, though? Di Maria last night was absolutely fantastic. Once again, I mean, we're talking about it with Ben Hayward yesterday on the show. Di Maria's just, it's like finally a bit of competition, and he has just shot up in his energy levels and his effort levels. He looks absolutely fantastic on that right flank. He's got a really great kind of interlinking play with anybody that's around him at the moment. And he's reading the game and reading kind of the movement of players around him. He's picking out passes so well, finding space out on that right flank. I mean, Juventus yesterday were poor. Let's not beat around the bush. I didn't really rate Juventus at all, whether it's Chiellini dragging Sergio Ramos down at the inside the penalty box for Cristiano Ronaldo's penalty on 29 minutes, which was a moronic decision from Chiellini to do that. And whether sometimes we see players going down in a box like that and there's a kind of a bit of speculation. Oh, was it a dive? Wasn't it a dive? Was he being grabbed? Was he just being kind of touched slightly? There was nothing on that.
Let me get back to a dive after this little argument. Please don't let me.
We will talk about Vidal as well. But you know, Chiellini dragging him down was ridiculous. And the other ridiculous moment that I was about to come onto was the Vidal dive. I mean, that's just criminal.
There should be some sort of retroactive kind of punishment for that, because that is just abhorrent, obscene, disgusting. I mean,
unbelievable, absolutely. Unbelievable, horrific.
Juice, you've done that before, haven't you? What? You've kicked the ground.
Yeah. Oh, of course. We've all made that silly mistake on one or two. It's like when
it hurts, it stings, man. And it is absolutely embarrassing. But
it's not as embarrassing as then appealing that you were tripped afterwards. Right. I mean, no, I'm sorry. Hang your head in shame. Name and shame these players that go down easily. Although, if you're talking about players that go down easily and being named and shamed, Cristiano Ronaldo goes into my book for last night as well. All right, we saw it was Koscielny who took that hefty blow from Lewandowski when Lewandowski got the yellow card for what many saw was a cynical elbow. I still see it as, look, I don't know if it's as intentional as people thought it was. A yellow card, maybe. It could have been easily given as a red, though. That's obviously a yellow or possibly a red. Chiellini should have kind of, you know, it's a free kick. Nothing more. Ronaldo shaming himself once again this is only done more to highlight the point why I want Portugal out of the World Cup and Sweden going through to Brazil 2014, because we'll get onto PSG in just a moment, Raf. But Chiellini puts his arm across a sprinting Ronaldo, right? And it's not like he's jabbed his arm out. He's just put his arm across him in that awful way and frustrating way when you're trying to go by a defender. When they put their arm out, it obstructs you. You kind of stop. You go, hey, I want a free kick here because, you know, he's put his arm across me. Yeah. The fact that Chiellini is always looking at the ball, not really looking at the man. He knows where Ronaldo is roughly, and he puts his arm out. And his arm, whilst he's running, I don't think it intentionally goes up to the face in any way, shape or form. And it barely catches him in the face. And Ronaldo drops to the deck, screaming, crying. And I thought, all right, okay, you know, maybe he's caught him, but he obviously didn't really catch him in the face at all, not with any power or any force to warrant a player to go down or for a player to go down clutching their face like that. And then the referee jogs over. I'm thinking, all right, yeah, free kick. You know, Chiellini is an idiot. Maybe a yellow card for the obstruction during a potentially goal-scoring opportunity. but nothing more than this. He produces a straight red, and you know, the commentators at first like, oh, he's giving him a red card, and the analyst was, I think it was Jerry Armstrong, was kind of saying, oh, well, you know, it's hand to the face, you know, it's a red card. And then they shut to the replay of it, and they all went back on their word like, oh, yeah, you know what, Ronaldo's actually doing a hell of a lot of play acting there. That's absolutely disgusting. And it was disgusting. And the trouble is that this guy, as Ferguson said, is, you know, according to Sir Alex Ferguson, he's the best player he's ever had the opportunity to manage. And this guy is the second or maybe even best player in the world. We'll have to see how Lionel Messi's injury crisis continues. But some unflattering performances from him at the moment. But Ronaldo is in that top two players in the world and in the mix for that best player ever.
Sure.
Were it not for this sort of antics, he could go into that best player ever kind of category. But I can't give him that credit when he continues to pull off just awful stunts like this. Do you remember last year against Levante when he took an absolute whack to the face, bust his eye open, blood was pouring out the top of his eye, and he kind of stood there, kind of took it a bit like a man and was like, oh man, that hurts. It's like when he gets tapped, he goes down like he's been shot. When it's actually real contact, he's like either up on his feet arguing, or he's just like, yeah, you can't stop me. You want to kick me? I'm Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm made of 100% pure muscle. And then as soon as he gets tapped, he's like, ah, my face. Just drives me potty to see him doing things like that. Absolutely awful from Ronaldo. Awful from
Vidal.
Vidal as well. And generally, it wasn't a game that really, really shone. Casillas conceding, which is a bit unlucky for his part, because I'm sure people will have kind of gone, oh, would Diego Lopez have palmed it straight out to Llorente? I'm sure that question will have been raised last night, which is unfortunate. I mean, Casillas,
he looked confident on edge, man. He looked on... Like,
you think? Just, I thought he looked confident last night. I thought he actually looked very commanding.
I saw him kind of yelling at his defenders. There were a couple set pieces where he was asking for a wall.
Yeah, there was that interesting moment when he asked for a wall to be made and it didn't get made for him. And then the ball came in and it, you know, didn't really trouble him anyway. And there were a few moments like that. But I thought when he's coming to collect footballs, his decision-making in general, for a keeper that's not really played much football since last year, halfway through last year, remember?
I thought he looked
good for a keeper that's been away from the game for as much as he has in the last kind of, well, since January, really. I was impressed by Casillas. And I'm giving him a lot of credit as well, considering the situation that he's in. You know, he is a hero at that club and he's a hero in Spain. And yet Diego Lopez has come in and has played well. And it's difficult to dislike Diego Lopez. It's difficult to dislike Mourinho for the decision that he made. And it's difficult to dislike Casillas and to see him in that situation, because all of these guys don't deserve the slack and and deserve more credit than they've had. Mourinho deserves the credit for bringing in Lopez. Lopez didn't deserve the criticism that he got when he stayed in goal when Casillas was fit again. And Casillas doesn't deserve to be on the bench at Real Madrid. He deserves to be playing for his club. And the only trouble is he can only have one goalkeeper. I mean, I still don't know who I go with, though. I still honestly don't know who I...
Yeah, no,
at this point, last year, I'd have said Casillas, you bring him back in, you know, he's your number one man. That now Diego Lopez has stayed in and produced, you know, some great performances, I don't know who you put in. You know, the heartstrings kind of pull for Casillas, but then the headstring pulls for Diego Lopez to kind of stay in and continue the job he's doing in the league.
Yeah, no, I mean, even last year, it was hard to even kind of put Casillas back in because, I mean, by the time he was healthy, Diego Lopez had been kind of just really making that box his own, and getting a response from his defense, you know, and generally being in an excellent shift every time he went out. I mean, you do have to give Casillas a ton of credit, Juice, for being able to kind of just come out and perform. It's like, we're only going to use you in Champions League. Now, you know, that's kind of a lot of pressure if you think about it. I mean,
you have to wait a week, sometimes two, sometimes maybe three or so, but for each game that you get. And then when you do play,
massive,
you're generally going against, you know, one of the best sides in Europe, as opposed to taking on maybe an Osasuna or someone like that, you know, somebody that you'd be expected to comfortably beat. Instead, you're taking on the champions of Italy. I mean, that's what I mean about giving Casillas credit for the situation that he's in and and the performances he's putting in, considering, you know, where he finds himself. It's a bizarre turn of events. It really is for him. You know, 2 years ago, if you'd said, ha, Iker Casillas fan is going to end up getting replaced by Diego Lopez at Real Madrid, people would have said, ha, and laughed at you for a long, long time. Now, though, it's reality for him. And it's, as I say, it's tough to see him sat on the bench during league games and then, you know, being thrown in for the big Champions League nights. Raf, obviously, the Real Madrid-Juventus games brought us a lot to discuss. There's still two games that I wouldn't mind having a chat about here before we shoot and obviously give a rundown of the Europa League fixtures coming up.
I was
going
to say, you don't want to try to run down a quick lineup of Kuban Krasnodar, the mighty Kuban Krasnodar.
You know what? I'm actually waiting for the team news to come in on that. So as soon as we get the team news, I will get it out to you. Don't worry. no, there were two games that also had plenty to talk about as well last night. Three really. Because we'll start with Ibrahimovic, because there's nothing this guy can't do at the moment. He's been doing it for the majority of his career. He is a wonderful, wonderful player, and it's a shame that he has never been involved in the Premier League. And I don't think there's many better ways to grab a hat trick than by hitting a strike that could really, if a keeper put his face in the way of that strike last night, it actually could have seriously done 93 miles an hour, Raf. If you put your hand to a football that's travelling 93 miles an hour, Monday footballs are light, but they ain't so light that, you know, if it touches you at 93 miles an hour, it's not going to hurt. That could have done damage. That could have broken bones. That could have broken...
There's actual juice. I don't even know if you've kind of... I'm a dork like this. I've looked up, you know, the kind of the physics behind this stuff. Think about a baseball, okay? A baseball, obviously, a little more dense. I get that, but you know, ultimately, it
comes
down to the
smaller surface area as well, because
surface area, and then the pounds that kind of rack up. And really, you know, a football, there's an actual weight to it. You know, there's a couple pounds to that ball. When you throw a couple pounds at 90 miles an hour, it's like throwing a baseball, but in a wider surface area, like you said, that could literally shatter facial bones. Nose, that thing's broken. And potentially deadly. I mean, literally, potentially deadly if you get a football to the face, especially in the wrong place or angle. I mean, you've heard of the stories where, you know, there's that little kind of like tiger palm upwards to the nose that like shoves the nose bone
goes in and kills them instantly, exactly. And all this stuff, which, you know, every kid at school hears and like, oh yeah, let's go and try it, and then every kid is like, wait a minute, I don't really want to kill anybody if it is true. And to be honest, I'm not really into hitting people, or most people I think are like that anyway. I mean, I don't want to be the dick that not only goes up and punches somebody in the face, but punches somebody in the face and actually kills them at school. I mean, there's bullying and then there's that. You
but
know
think,
what I mean?
think of the street cred that comes along with killing somebody from one shot. That's
street cred while you change schools and end up going to a place where they're probably a lot harder people than you, and you end up getting your ass kicked every day. Yeah. You know, I'm not down with that pussy, but that old story. That could, if that's true, that could genuinely happen if that ball struck you like square in the noggin. When I saw it go in, I mean, the first two goals, there's a Graham Souness, ex-Galatasaray, ex-Liverpool player and manager. Ex-Galatasaray manager famously went into the middle of the pitch I think it was Fenerbahce after Galo won the title and stuck a big Galatasaray flag in the centre of the pitch. An absolutely fantastic moment in Turkish football. And and then said afterwards, oh, I didn't realise it would cause offence. Like, come on, mate. That's like being a United player and winning the title at Anfield and sticking a giant United flag in the middle of the pitch. But Souness always kind of says this kind of, oh, you know what? I don't think Zlatan is really, you know, he's a good player, but I don't know if he's all that. I don't think he'd make it in the Premier League, etc., etc. And, you know, whenever this happens, you kind of just think, what are you talking about, mate? This guy is great. You know, 6'3", 4", whatever he is, fantastic. fantastic footwork for a big man. The ability to try out all of these tricks. He's obviously got like martial arts background or something, because he's, you know, he's got his kung fu kicks all over the place, and has just got a hell of a strike and a hell of a way of reading the game. And obviously the aerial threat that he provides too. He gets the first goal. It's a tap in. He's like, all right, you know, if Souness says, well, you know, it's not an impressive goal. Yeah. Second one, the kind of flick, trying to do the little heel flick. It didn't pull off quite as smoothly as it could have, obviously. And again, there's kind of a call for, well, you know, he tried to do something really special and it didn't quite pull off, you know. So Souness at the moment on his first two goals, Zlatan last night, there's something to be said about Souness has the argument of, you know, they're not great finishes. It's built by the players around him. And then the third one cups up and you see that ball bouncing. And you see where Zlatan is in relation to the camera and you're like, oh, go on, hit it. Like, just hit it. And he just runs up to it. He doesn't even think twice. And absolutely leathers this thing. I mean, I've not seen a strike get hit that sweetly or that powerfully in ever. I can't remember. The only one that comes close in terms of power, I think, is Tony Yeboah's strike, if you've ever seen that, against Wimbledon. Leeds against Wimbledon, brings the ball down on his thigh, it bobbles out in front of him really nicely, like perfectly for him to hit it. And he smashes it into the crossbar, it does that beautiful bar and in, kind of crack, crack, kind of down and in. And I think that came up at like a 91 or 92. But this strike, 93, it's just a bullet. Faster than Roberto Carlos's free kick against France, the great free kick against France, which was about 85 mile an hour or so. So it just shows how impressive that is. And Souness, you know, you kind of wanted them to cut back into the studio to Souness and say, like, so what do you think about this then? Not good enough for the Premier League? And amazingly, they put the questions kind of to Jamie Carragher and Peter Schmeichel, who were also there, and kind of let Souness off the hook about talking about Zlatan and how good he was. But I was gutted that they didn't do that. Unbelievable. Bagging four. The guy is unstoppable at the moment. And PSG, to me, we were talking about a side that at the moment looks like they could stop Bayern. PSG kind of looked like the only side that I think could do that in the Champions League. They look explosive. They are dominating French football at the moment, but they are really putting on a show in Champions League football as well. They are very, very impressive and very dangerous as well. If I was a manager in Champions League football, I would be greatly fearing PSG and facing them either in the knockout round or anything like that, man.
It's amazing the response that Laurent Blanc is getting there. To be honest, I thought that they were going to be a very soft team this season. I'm very, very impressed by what he's done coming in the first year.
Not sound as soft, I hope.
No.
Didn't expect them to be sound as soft. Who are
not that soft.
Who are living up to Rafa's description of them. Just finally, I want to finish, Rafa, before we do a Europa League rundown. What's going on with UEFA? Like, I hate to tarnish it, I mentioned it earlier in the show, but what is going on with UEFA? The disgrace that was not delaying the game, at least, between Benfica and Olympiacos. That there was a great line on television last night, which was, and it was really tough for Olympiacos in that second half because, you know, they were defending the deep end. So, I mean, it was just a swimming pool last night, an absolute swimming pool. Of that torrential rainpour that happened at halftime and continued throughout periods of the second half. It was almost unplayable. Olympiacos had a goal that would have gone in on a dry pitch, you know, and the ball got completely stuck in the water. The only reason that it didn't hit strike the back of the net, it was a complete farce. UEFA needed to obviously deal with that. UEFA also needs to deal with, on a much more serious note, the racial abuse coming from the CSKA Moscow fans.
I can't believe we didn't talk about that.
That came out for Yaya Touré and members of the
very classy
City squad.
You know, very classy way to handle it too by Touré. The way that he's just like, you know, it just makes me sad. Like he doesn't even come out like he doesn't attack them. He's completely gone. You know, a
risen
level
above. Yeah.
Risen above and just kind of, you know, very. Makes me look at Touré.
So this he treats in that class when all he says is, look, hopefully the right repercussions will come, you know, and, you know, there will be kind of justice in that interview. Mm-hmm. Vincent Kompany tweets, racist chants again in Moscow today. We've all said enough. UEFA.com, government, RF, CSKA, all eyes are on you now. Hashtag stop racism. And in a very classy way, CSKA Moscow come out and say, monkey chants? What monkey chants today? Denying Touré was racially abused, which is just disgusting.
See, I've read that. Oh, those monkey chants, they weren't aimed at Touré. They were just very general monkey chants. Like, what are you talking about?
I'm pretty sure not every CSKA Moscow fan in that ground was telling the joke that Hodgson told at halftime to their to the guy next to them. I mean, you know, ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And then UEFA, I read this morning, their first move in all of this. All of this play, or from kind of incidents taking place in the last few days in Champions League football, is they're going to be investigating Ajax after there was trouble up at Celtic.
Of course.
And of course, the investigation is going to be lodged there after there was a trouble between fans up at Celtic Park in the tie between Ajax and Celtic on Tuesday night. Now, if I was UEFA, I'd have said, like, hold up on that press release, guys. We are going to put the press release out that we're fighting racism. Like, let's fight hooliganism too, but let's show that we're doing something here. You know, all the captain's armbands in the Champions League have stop racism on them. Let's show that we are doing something to stop racism. Let's act quickly on this and show that we're actually going to try and stop this, etc., etc. Instead, no, the press release comes out that they're fighting the fighters outside Celtic Park. Hooliganism, of course, is despicable, but there's something needs to be done because UEFA never do enough to fight racism at this moment in time. And it's just disappointing. I don't want to leave the show on that, so I will let you know that this is a slight, very offside note, but I received a great press release coming through today to me, which was that Gillette, of course, the makers of those famous razor blades and shaving equipment, obviously, they're going to lose a lot of money this next month in November, because it is, of course, Movember, where people grow their mustaches for charity, raising money for charity by giving themselves ridiculous mustaches that make many people look like they shouldn't be allowed near a school. so this is obviously being going to hinder Gillette quite a bit. What they're also doing, though, is they're seeing the falling profits. And admittedly, they will probably cash in like crazy when December hits and everybody starts shaving off their mustaches. So they'll probably still be all right, kind of thing. But they're also giving money away to charity for every goal that is scored in the Premier League, League One, League Two, the Championship, and the Conference Premier as well. Every single goal that flies in during November, Gillette will be donating money to charity for. I think it's a cracking little thing for Gillette to be doing. Nice way for them to kind of get involved in the Movember thing. And obviously, for goalkeepers, it's every clean sheet that they keep, which is kind of weird, because maybe you want lots of goals so that there's more money goes, but then the goalkeepers don't really get to do anything. So then they get a clean sheet, but then it's like, well, you stop them donating money. So yeah.
Why?
So yeah. But
selfish of you. How selfish of you.
Yeah, goalkeepers. So if I'm a goalkeeper in England, in English football right now, I would say, let whatever comes through go. Yeah. Let's raise some money for charity.
Think of the children. Yeah. Think of the cancer patients.
And remember, keep those Project Pink hashtags coming through as well on Twitter. Let's leave it at that for today. The Europa League results and games are about to kick off. Annecy taking on Tromso. Shakhtar Karagandy, of course, the famous sacrifices of animals in stadiums, take on AZ Alkmaar. Looking forward to see AZ because Johansson got another goal, I think, on the weekend. He's in stellar bit of form at the moment. Dynamo Kiev take on FC Thun, which should be quite a nice one. Sheriff take on Tottenham Hotspur. Lazio take on Cyprus side Apollon. Apoel take on Bordeaux. Fiorentina take on Praduji Târgu-Jiu from Romania. Dinipro take on Pacos de Ferreira, the dropouts from the Champions League. Maccabi Tel Aviv taking on Frankfurt will actually be quite a tasty tie, I think. As will Pauk against Maccabi Haifa. Real Betis take on Vitoria Guimarães. And Estoril take on Freiburg. There's plenty of action, of course, around the Europa League for everybody to be getting their teeth into. Zagreb PSV is the other one that I've got highlighted down here as a decent tie to be getting a look at. We will catch up on some Europa League action and start previewing the weekend. Tomorrow on the show, a big thanks once again to Will Tidy for joining us today. Of course, Raf, a big thanks to you, man. I'm glad that the birthday went well. Now you get back, sit down in front of some Europa League football and enjoy some pumpkin ice cream, man. And let's leave it at that.
Elfsborg and Esbjerg is what I'm watching today. Yeah. Elfsborg and Esbjerg.
Enjoy. Yeah. I tell you what, try and say it. It'll probably be easier to pronounce those names with a mouthful of ice cream.
Yeah, that's true.
It'll probably sound better. Look, we'll leave it there for today. Remember, at World Football Daily, and obviously show at worldfootballdaily.com to get in contact with us, as is the Facebook page and the rant line 310-909-8483. This is WFD for Thursday. A big thanks to Will Tardy, a big thanks to you, Raf. A big thanks to you guys for listening as well. We'll keep it real here, and we will be back to you tomorrow with a build-up to the league this weekend. Take care. Have a good one, and enjoy.